After all the disrespect that you'd show me, why would I help you? Oh, I think it's pretty obvious. Brock Lesnar is back, and he's coming for your title, and you need backup.
Are you insinuating that I am afraid of Brock Lesnar?
You're a chicken!
You think they apologize to me? Because that really would go a long way in
kind of putting... Cut the crap, Seth. You want those guys back.
Because... You're a chicken!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You said you haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 389 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, June 28th, 2015, here from not-so-sunny New York, where the New York State Assembly pushed through legislation this week making Buffalo Wing Day a thing. Yet they couldn't pull their heads out of their asses long enough to put MMA legalization to a vote, just to bring it to the floor for a vote. And so now the legislative session has come to an end, and we wait until 2016 for them to, once again, not put it to a vote and watch it fail. The frustrating thing about it, and I'm a casual MMA fan at best. I'm not like a hardcore fanatic about it or anything like that. Yeah, I'm a fan of it. My brother is a much bigger fan than I am. I have friends who are big MMA fans who are dying to go to a show at MSG. The votes were there this time. That's what's most frustrating about this whole thing. They had the votes. They had the support for it. But they stalled and they stalled and they stalled until some of the assemblymen, they left to go on vacation. Some of them left to go, jack off to whale porn or whatever it is that these idiots do. And so the speaker didn't want to call it to a vote on that last day without having the numbers that they needed to pass it. Otherwise, maybe it would have failed. So New York remains the lone holdout in all of the United States where MMA is still illegal. 49 states have legalized it. New York is the one that has not. But hey, at least the people of Buffalo get their wings. Audible is still offering listeners of the Sound Off a free audiobook of your choice along with your 30-day trial membership of the service. Just go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. That's our URL. You can pick from over 180,000 titles, among them the Dusty Rhodes book. If you want to hear some dream stories from Dusty himself, his book is up there. You can get it for free if you use our link. So audibletrial.com/solomonster. We need to get a few more signups here before the month of June is out. We only have a few days left, so we need your support. Sign up and get your free audiobook right now. Plus, don't forget, we have our Pro Wrestling Tees store, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. 20 different t-shirts up for sale, up to 5XL in size on all of them, and they ship all over the world. And thank you to some of you who have sent in some really cool photos. Got some great shots of you guys wearing shirts, meeting wrestlers. My favorite, I think, still is the shot of Jerry Lawler with this happy, giddy look on his face, pointing to the Hello, I'm Shitty the Announcer shirt, which actually was not intended for him. It was intended for Shitty the Announcer, a.k.a. Michael Cole. But Lawler seemed completely... he just seemed completely enamored with this shirt, so that was a great photo. Somebody posted a photo of them meeting Shawn Michaels wearing one of the Sound Off shirts. So anything like that, just tweet it to me. You know, I'll be happy to retweet it out to everybody else. And if you like what you hear each week, you can make a PayPal donation. Our website is thesolomonster.com. That's the place to go. Check the right-hand side. You'll see the PayPal donation box if you scroll down a little bit. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. $30 or more will get you a nickname plus a brief shout-out for your own podcast or YouTube channel. Just make sure you include the information when you submit the donation. Thank you to Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, The Widowmaker Joshua Owen, Light 'Em Up Lamont Ambler, Rambo Randall Woodard, James Always Be Closing Adair, or ABC Adair as I call him, and The Soul Taker, Sumanta Roy Chaduri. Hope I pronounced that right. So thank you to everybody who made a donation, and again, please do so on thesolomonster.com if you are interested in doing so. We're going to get into the TNA Global Force Wrestling stuff. I promise I have a lot to say about that. You're not going to want to miss that. Even if you're the kind of person who usually skips the TNA stuff because you don't care about TNA, and I don't blame you, this is a segment I think you should stick around for. So that's coming up a little bit later. But first, I watched the first episode of Tough Enough, and I got to say, I wasn't impressed. I don't know why they didn't just air the competition special as the first episode. They have the competition special on the network. I think they may have actually aired it on USA the day that Tough Enough debuted. Sometime like earlier in the day, they finally put it on USA. But it wasn't the first episode. I thought that hour-long competition special on the network did a much better job than this episode did of just getting you familiar with all the different people. And I don't know. If I were them, I would have aired that first. As the first episode, I thought that was much more effective at getting these guys over. ZZ the Alligator Man, easily my favorite so far. He was my favorite back from the competition special, not just this first episode. Guy's only 18 years old, but everyone else is completely boring compared to him. Just, you know, put you to sleep, who could possibly care? But this guy's different. I think that's what I like about him. They just went straight into making everybody do these dumb drills. And that, by the way, more than half the current roster could never do themselves. And then after that, they just showed everybody out partying and getting drunk. I barely even know who these people are, and I'm supposed to care that they're going out to party. So they show you, basically, here's the way the show works. They show you a bunch of pre-taped footage of them training, footage of them living in their barracks, as they call them, which is at the Performance Center, their living quarters. And then they cut to live in some studio somewhere. They have a small little audience. Chris Jericho is the host. Renee Young is his co-host. They have the judges panel, which is consisting of Hulk Hogan, Daniel Bryan, and Paige. Each judge has one save that they can use for the season if at any point they want to spare somebody who is at risk of being cut. And they have this bottom three. Three people will end up in the bottom three each week. So none of the judges used their save this week, and poor Hank, good old Hank, was eliminated from the show. They each gave these three people in the bottom three 30 seconds to cut a promo to save their ass and stave off elimination. And this dumb shit cuts a promo talking about how, compared to everybody else there, he's the average Joe. I'm the average Joe of the group. Oh yeah, that's exactly what they want to hear. I'm average. That's why you should spare me. So, of course, he got cut. Word of advice to the other contestants, if you ever find yourself in the bottom three and they give you the floor, okay, they put a mic in your hand, don't talk about how average you are. ZZ ended up in the bottom three as well because they think he's out of shape. Don't let them fool you. They love this guy, okay? That's not some inside track or anything like that. Believe me, they love this guy. They don't want him off the show. When the fan voting came in, because they have fan voting now as part of Tough Enough. So they have their bottom three, and they put it to a fan vote. Who do the fans like? Who do they want to see booted? Who do they want to see stick around? So they did the fan vote, and ZZ got like 52% of the vote. The other two guys got like 20%. I mean, it wasn't even close. People love this guy. He's got more personality than half their roster right now. Even if he doesn't win. I mean, they're going to end up giving him a shot. I'm confident that this guy's going to get a shot no matter what. They're not investing 10 weeks of television in this guy just to let him go. I kind of thought the same thing about Luke when they had Luke Robinson on the last season with Austin. You know, Luke was a douche, but he was he was a good douche, right? He looked like a guy that you would pay money to see somebody punch him in the face. He looked like a pro wrestler. He looked like he was tailor-made for this, and they never gave him a shot. But I think they're going to give this guy a shot whether he wins or he loses. They also need to hope that the audience for the show grows because the first episode did not do well at all. 0.8 rating, 1.2 million viewers. So bad that starting this week, USA Network is airing a Raw replay, which they do not do. They do not like to do that because it takes away from the rating on Monday night. But they're airing a two-hour edited Raw replay as the lead-in to Tough Enough this week from 6 to 8 p.m. So, two-hour Raws are back. It's too bad I won't be home for it, or else I'd consider ditching Mondays for the two-hour version on Tuesdays. Although I don't know how long they're planning on doing this for. My guess is it's going to be very temporary. But if you are the kind of person who doesn't care about watching Raw on Monday nights, this might be right up your alley. Give the edited version a shot on Tuesdays. Some quick injury updates. It's the walking wounded right now in WWE. Tyson Kidd had spinal fusion surgery this week, same surgery that Steve Austin and Edge had, so he's going to be gone for at least a year. Hopefully he'll be able to come back stronger. I know Austin and Edge were on borrowed time after their surgeries, but Edge got almost another decade out of wrestling before he had to retire. Austin, not so much, but he was pretty beat up. He was much older than Edge was at that point. Rhino, look at Rhino. Rhino had the same surgery. Rhino's still going strong. He had the same surgery. So let's all root for Tyson Kidd because, yeah, he's one of the good guys. And you hate to see somebody all messed up like that. Eric Rowan reportedly suffered a torn biceps, and he's going to be out 4 to 6 months, which sucks for him, and it sucks for Luke Harper. Maybe Bully Ray put a Dudley curse on them for using the 3D. Jamie Noble suffered 3 crack ribs at the hands of Brock Lesnar on Monday night, and it is also believed that Daniel Bryan's injury is in fact concussion-related, which Bret Hart kind of alluded to in that Sports Illustrated interview last week. It does not have to do with his neck, which I didn't think it did. You know, as far as I knew, the neck surgery was a success. The issue that he had last year was a nerve issue. If anything, it had to do with, like, the nerve in his elbow or that connected to his elbow. But his neck is fine. So we just didn't know if this was the nerve issue again, if his neck was re-injured, or if it was concussion-related or something else. But it is concussion-related. It stems from a concussion he got in a match with Sheamus on SmackDown right after WrestleMania. And it sounds like, I mean, this is pretty serious stuff here. It sounds like his career is very much in jeopardy right now. And before people jump all over Sheamus, we don't know exactly how the injury happened. I went back and I watched the match because I wanted to try to see if I could tell the exact spot where he bonked his head or he got kicked in the head or what happened here. So I watched the match. Bryan, he busted his head open hard way at the end of the match. He was bleeding. But it was right after Bryan delivered a series of rapid-fire headbutts to Sheamus, so it's entirely possible that Bryan did this to himself. It's kind of like when Dolph Ziggler gave Sheamus a headbutt in that pay-per-view match a couple of months ago and was bleeding all over the place. You know, the dumb shit did it to himself. It wasn't Sheamus' fault for having a hard head. So we don't know. We don't know exactly who caused the injury, whose fault it is. So let's not pile on Sheamus. I'll actually defend Sheamus on this. It's just like last week, you know, with Tyson Kidd and Samoa Joe. I stand by what I said last week about Bret Hart being out of line for publicly trashing Samoa Joe and the Muscle Buster as being a reckless move. The guy's been using the move for over a decade, and as far as I know, he's never injured anybody with it. So how you can turn around and call it reckless or call him reckless, I have no idea. That's like saying the Tombstone is a reckless move, right? You're turning the person upside down. What if you drop them? They could be paralyzed. Does that make the Tombstone a reckless move? Does that make the Undertaker reckless for dropping Triple H on his head with it at Judgment Day back in 2000 and giving him a stinger? You ever wonder why you didn't see the Tombstone so much after that? That's why. May have been the only time the Undertaker ever hurt anybody with that move. That doesn't mean the move is reckless. That doesn't mean the Undertaker is reckless. So let's not jump the gun on assigning blame for who injured who. The latest frivolous concussion lawsuit, the latest cash grab against WWE, was filed on behalf of the family of the late Matt Osborne, better known as Maniac Matt Bourne, Big Josh in WCW, Doink the Clown in WWE. The original Doink the Clown, by the way, the best version of Doink the Clown. Heel Doink was played by Matt Osborne. This whole thing, when I read about this made me so mad. This lawsuit, okay, here's what the lawsuit claims. The lawsuit claims that Osborne suffered, quote, traumatic brain injuries that resulted in depression and drug abuse, which ultimately resulted in his untimely death. Died in 2013. Now, mind you, Osborne made his pro wrestling debut in 1978. He worked for promotions all over the country. He didn't debut in WWE until 1985. And he was there for a little over a year, 13 months maybe. Didn't come back until 1992. I don't even think he wrestled a match for them in 92. He was just starting the Doink character. He probably didn't wrestle for them until 93. And later that year, in 93, he was gone. He was gone because he was all fucked up on drugs. But that's it. Aside from one appearance in a Legends Battle Royal on Raw in 2007, he never wrestled for WWE again after 1993. But he did wrestle for plenty of other places right up until the day he died. Plenty of independents. This guy's career spanned 35 years. 35 years! And they're going to claim that WWE is the reason this guy is dead. PW Insider actually read the lawsuit, and to show you how even more ridiculous this lawsuit is, as if you need any more evidence, his lawyers point to the fact that WWE does not use helmets to protect trainees' heads while training, which actually is, that's not true anymore, because they do use helmets in NXT. And they say the WWE never provided Osborne with helmets while he was performing or training, which is even funnier. Of course, the problem with that is that he wasn't trained by WWE. He was trained by his dad in the 70s, so that's a blatant lie. And even more absurd, the lawyers claim that he started wrestling in 85 after Vince McMahon approached him about becoming a pro wrestler. I mean, that right there, that is almost Hogan-esque on the bullshit meter. That Vince McMahon first approached him about being a wrestler in 85 when he had already been wrestling for 7 years. You know, here's what pisses me off about this, okay? I don't get, like, too angry about any of this stuff because it doesn't affect me. But what really pisses me off, legitimately, is that you may well have some folks out there who have a legitimate case against WWE, like some of those young guys who claim they were abused by Bill DeMott and developmental and they were bullied and harassed. You know, maybe some of them are full of shit, but clearly there are some people who experience some pretty bad stuff there, okay? There are people who have paper trails, they have emails that they sent, documentation of things that were done to them. And then you have these asshole lawyers trying to convince these families that there's a pot of gold waiting for you at the end of the rainbow. And they fall for it. I don't know if they're gullible. I don't know if they're desperate. I don't know if they just want, you know, the easy money. I don't know. I don't want to take it out on the families. I take it out on the lawyers for preying on the families. But they fall for it. And once these cases are dismissed, And they will be. Believe me, they will be. I bet you every single one of these cases is going to be dismissed. This one, the one that was brought about by Mabel's widow, Billy Jack Haynes, who I think just had his case moved to Connecticut. I think that's what WWE had pushed for. All of these cases are going to get dismissed at some point. But what this is going to do is it's going to make it harder for everybody because these people are abusing the system. That's what sucks. So if you have some legitimate cases out there, they're going to get drowned out by this sea of bullshit. Raw this week took place in Indianapolis. Raw snore. I thought this was one of the most boring shows of the year. I like the idea of having 4 or 5 weeks between pay-per-views to build your stories instead of two. But if this is the end result, I may need to rethink that. If this is the best they can come up with, you know what? Maybe they should have a pay-per-view every week. Keep them on their toes. The only things you need to pay attention to on this show were the segments involving Brock Lesnar. And even those segments, you know, they had me scratching my head. Somebody actually decided, hey, we've got Brock back, so I have an idea. Let's have him apologize to Michael Cole and JBL. I mean, you know, at least they acknowledged what he did to Cole and Cole acted scared, which he didn't do the week before. They still never said anything about this supposed lawsuit that Cole had said he was going to bring against Brock. I know they did a video on .com with Cole talking about a settlement, but they made no mention of that on the show unless I missed it. They didn't say anything about that. So Brock shook his hand. Cole, that is. Gave him a noogie. That was amusing. The idea of Brock Lesnar having to apologize to anybody for anything, this is not what people want to see. Seth Rollins has been acting like a grade-A dick to Triple H and the Authority now for weeks. Why can't the story just be, they did what's best for business by bringing Brock back from his suspension to kill Seth and teach him a lesson? That's it. That's all it has to be. Heyman cut a promo building up the match at Battleground, talking about Suplex City and such, and that was that. By the way, Michael Cole is now saying Suplex City. I think he may have referred to one of Brock's Germans at the end of the show as Suplex City, as though that's the name of a move now. Which, as soon as Michael Cole starts saying something over and over again, he officially renders it uncool. He has now killed it. He has killed Suplex City. Get ready to hear Suplex City over and over now at Battleground. Actually, you know what? I take back what I said before about only having to watch the Brock stuff and nothing else on this show. What you need to go back and do is watch the New Day's entrance when Kofi Kingston came out for his match with Neville. The way that he was clapping, that was actually pretty funny, I have to say. I did have a chuckle when I saw him come out and do that. You know, the great thing about that, the whole New Day stuff, is they actually look like they're having fun with the gimmick. You know, they've embraced it. You know, Xavier Woods. I mean, come on. Before, we all knew Xavier Woods was a talented guy, but I don't think too many people looked at him and said, oh, Xavier Woods, here's a guy that I love to see every single week. I look forward to watching the show because Xavier Woods is going to be on the show. No, nobody said that. But now, this guy's one of the most entertaining parts of the entire show. And a lot of the segments they have the New Day guys doing, the real funny stuff, they don't even air that on television. They put it on the website. They put it on YouTube. Put this shit on TV. Kane pinned Dean Ambrose with a terrible choke slam off the top rope after Seth Rollins interfered. The story is that Seth, he's now trying to get back in the good graces of Kane, back in the good graces of J&J Security, because Brock Lesnar is back, and he's a chicken shit heel who can't fight his own battles. So that's the story that they're telling. Sheamus and Roman Reigns had a match, a rematch from SmackDown, because if it happened on SmackDown, it didn't happen. And so just do it again on Monday. The match went 16 minutes. 16 minutes. You would think after 16 minutes, we would get a finish. But no. Nope. The finish was Bray Wyatt popped up on the Titantron. He was having a tea party with what we were supposed to believe was Roman's daughter. And Reigns just runs off to the back. 16 minutes. And that's the finish. You want to do a fuck finish? Fine. You want to protect Sheamus? You want to protect Roman? Fine. I say if you want to protect them both, don't do the fucking match. But okay, fine. You get a screwjob finish every now and then. I'm cool with that. You're building to a pay-per-view match. But for the love of God, don't devote 16 minutes to this if that's the best that you can come up with. What a waste of television time. You could put that New Day segment. You could put three New Day segments on the show, and it would be far more entertaining than what we saw here. 16 minutes they wasted with this. And when he finally got backstage, he didn't find Bray, he didn't find his daughter, he found a shrine with pictures devoted to himself, all over the walls, Roman Reigns photos, with the eyes and mouth cut out, which was kind of creepy, I will say. John Cena made his triumphant return to Raw, showing no ill effects of the back injury he suffered in Money in the Bank. That 1 week did him a world of good. During his promo, he chastised Kevin Owens for assaulting a 95-pound musician in Machine Gun Kelly. 95 pounds. I think that's being generous. I mean, let's be honest here. He's basically skin and bones with some ink on them. 80 pounds at the most. He called Kevin Owens a great wrestler but a garbage human being. Which reminds me, this past week was the 8-year anniversary of the Benoit tragedy. Kevin Owens came out. He said he didn't care what other people thought of him. He said that people have called him out of shape. Some people have called him a slob. Others have called him a dirtbag. Well, this out-of-shape slob of a dirtbag beat you at Elimination Chamber and left you laying at Money in the Bank, he said. And now that he sees how much that U.S. title truly means to John Cena, he wants it for himself. And to make sure the crowd cheers for John Cena and boos the evil foreigner, that's what he said. He started speaking in French. And John Cena said, nobody cares where you're from. And then John Cena started speaking in French. And for some reason, he started talking in Chinese. Now, my Chinese is a little rusty, I will say. But I believe what he said was, you will job to me, little fat man. I don't know what the hell happened in the Divas match. The Bellas wrestled as babyfaces against Naomi and Tamina. Alicia Fox was with the Bellas. One of the women tripped over the referee at one point and fucked up a spot. Nikki pinned Naomi with the rack attack. The end. The Ryback pinned Mark Henry. Giant splash off the top rope for the finish. I actually like that. You know, you don't always have to win with your finishing move. In WWE speak, that usually means you're going to win then with a distraction roll-up or some crappy count-out or some crappy DQ. But here, he won with a totally different move. Ryback's a big guy. He's coming off the top rope. I don't know. I liked it. Match was over, and Ryback backstage cut a heartfelt promo talking about how his parents had not seen each other in 15 years until recently when they came to watch him win the Intercontinental title. And all I can say to that is they both deserve to be jailed for not feeding their son. That's child neglect. That's why this guy walks around all the time chanting, "Feed me more." He's been scarred for life, this poor bastard. I flipped on to Family Feud. I don't know what the hell came on next, but whatever it was, it just pissed me off. So I was flipping around, and I came on Family Feud. Well, I've always been a fan of Family Feud. When I was a kid, Ray Combs was the host. I mean, Richard Dawson was, you know, the all-time host of Family Feud. But I grew up on Ray Combs, so I was a big Ray Combs fan. It's kind of like the James Bond thing, right? Sean Connery's the all-time James Bond. Well, when I was young, you know, my parents, my mother, was a fan of Roger Moore. So I watched nothing but Roger Moore or James Bond movies. So that's why I'm a Roger Moore fan. You know, leave me alone. It's not my fault. But I just think, you know, Steve Harvey, he's been the host of the show for a while now. He is fantastic. I've really grown to like him. I wasn't sold on him at first, but I have to say he's really grown into it, and I've become a big fan of him as the host of the show. And like I said, I was always partial to Ray Combs. Believe it or not, I love Richard Karn in the role. He was the guy who played Al Borland on Home Improvement. I liked him when he hosted. I think he only hosted for like one season. But he ain't no Steve Harvey. I think Steve Harvey's great. I saw the Celebrity Edition that just debuted on ABC last Sunday. It did like 8 million viewers. WWE would kill to have as many viewers as frickin' Family Feud had last weekend. And I enjoyed it. But anyway, a little aside there. Anyway, when I flipped back to Raw, I saw Seth Rollins in the ring. He was apologizing to the Authority. More apologies on this show. How come WWE doesn't send somebody out to apologize to the fans who have to sit through this every single week? Rollins begged Mercury, Noble, and Kane for forgiveness. Brock's music hit. Everyone bailed on Seth, leaving him to die. And then Kane and J&J attacked Lesnar for the swerve. And Lesnar fought them off, which included ramming poor Jamie Noble into the barricade, breaking three of his... I shouldn't laugh. But he broke three of his ribs in the process. Look, Brock's a big guy, you know, and Jamie Noble's, like, really, really small. I mean, even to a normal person, he's a small guy, but to Brock, he's, like, tiny. And Brock's just killing people out there. He's throwing everybody around. He's in pure beast mode. What the hell did you think was going to happen? Apparently what happened is his shoulder got driven into Noble's ribcage, and that's what caused the injury. So Noble was down. He was never seen again. You could kind of see the medics in the background. They were trying not to shoot it, but you could see there were medics in the background. They were tending to Noble for the remainder of the segment. They gave him oxygen. That's how bad off he was. In the ring, Lesnar gave Rollins a few German suplexes. He went to give him the F5. Kane grabbed Brock by the throat, gave him a choke slam. He tried for another one, but Brock gave Kane a German suplex, which is no small feat. And in the end, the numbers were too much for Brock. They beat him down. They wrapped his leg around the post. They hit it with a chair. Rollins gave Lesnar a springboard knee off the ropes to the side of the head. Another choke slam by Kane, followed by a crappy-looking pedigree by Rollins to end the show. By the way, those crappy-looking pedigrees are becoming a pattern here. But I guess, you know, whatever. I guess you got to get heat on Lesnar every now and then. But I didn't like this. And it just dragged on way too long. I don't know if they were stalling because of what happened to Noble. Looks like they were a little lost at one point. Like Noble, I mean, I'm sure Noble wasn't going to have this great role. You know, they had Mercury in there. I'm sure Noble just would have been doing whatever Mercury was doing. But maybe they were stalling because of what happened to him. But this was no good. Thankfully, there were some really good shows on Wednesday night this week that reaffirmed my love for wrestling.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
We have a full lineup for the July 4th show from Tokyo, which airs at 5:30 a.m. Eastern, 2:30 a.m. Pacific. They're calling it the Beast in the East because Brock Lesnar is wrestling on the show. And here's the lineup. Cesaro against Diego of Los Matadores. I saw some people on the Facebook group who were just flabbergasted by this match. It was a house show. I mean, this was never intended to be a TV special up until recently. And you know what? Yeah, I'd love to see Cesaro against Brock. It would make for a great match, even though both are baby faces, and it really doesn't make sense to do that match right now. And we're probably never going to get a chance to see it, so why not just do it on a show like this? So I agree. I would love to see that match. But Cesaro and Diego, it's something different. Los Matadores on their own, they're very good. They're very good wrestlers. Just that together, nobody gives a shit about them. But, like, calm down. This is going to turn out probably to be a much better match, I think, than people are giving it credit for. Lucha Dragons against Big E and Xavier Woods of New Day. Paige, Nikki Bella, and Naomi, triple threat for the Divas Championship. Chris Jericho against Neville, which should be very good. John Cena and Dolph Ziggler against Kane and King Barrett. Kevin Owens defends the NXT Championship against Finn Balor. And the real main event on this show, I don't know what match is going to go on last, but this is the real main event. Brock Lesnar one-on-one with Kofi Kingston. I am so excited for that match. I'm way more excited than I should be. I'm probably more excited for that match and to see what they do. And I shouldn't be, because the match is going to be over in 2 minutes. Anybody who thinks this match is going more than 2 or 3 minutes, you're out of your mind. And Kevin Owens and Finn Balor and Jericho and Neville, I mean, there's some really good matches on this card, but that's the one. That's the one that I'm waking up early for that day. Triple H on Twitter is teasing a SummerSlam-related announcement using the Future Is Now hashtag. That could be the Manhattan Center show on August 22nd. That's been rumored for a while now. We even saw the ad that leaked for it before it got taken down. I was starting to feel guilty about not getting tickets to the Ring of Honor show in Brooklyn that night, since they've just added Nakamura and Okada to the show. But I won't feel so bad if they announce NXT. If they bring NXT to the Manhattan Center, I'm not going to make the same mistake I made in 05 when I did not go to the ECW one-night stand show. I'm still kicking myself to this day. How much fun it would have been to be at that show. I'm still pissed at Webmaster Mike from SE Scoops. He was at that show. And I was quite jealous of everybody who went, because that was a fun show to watch on television. Imagine being there live. So I think the first NXT show in New York probably be very similar. Johnny Gargano, who is under contract to WWN, which is World Wrestling Network, the parent company, I guess, that runs Evolve. He wrestled UHA Nation last week in a dark match at the NXT tapings, which is most interesting that Gargano would be the one to be in that match, given all the rumors that I mentioned about a possible working relationship between NXT and Evolve. I mean, nothing's ever really confirmed until it's confirmed, but clearly, there's some kind of arrangement here. This week's show opened with a 10-bell salute to Dusty Rhodes. Triple H and the entire NXT roster were out on stage. It was very nice. It's a very nice thing they did. Greg Hamilton interviewed Hideo Itami, who is still 3 to 4 months away from coming back from shoulder surgery. He will be in Japan to challenge the winner of the Kevin Owens-Finn Balor title match to a future championship match. Kevin Owens came out and he proved that right now he can do no wrong. I said last week, the guy's on fire. He can't have a bad match. Apparently he can't have a bad promo either. He tried to call Hideo delusional, but he stumbled over his words. People started laughing at him. But he didn't miss a beat. He acknowledged it. He acknowledged that he fucked up. And he said he sounded like Hideo trying to speak English. Thought that was a great line. Great comeback. And he started to come down to the ring. He said he was going to injure Itami's one good arm. When Finn Balor attacked him, he went to do a double foot stomp off the stage down onto Owens, but Rhino attacked Balor and left him laying. Colin Cassidy and Enzo Amore beat Jason Jordan and his partner of the week, Sylvester Lefort. Amore rolled up Jordan for the win. So, being that he pinned Jordan, and it wasn't Jordan's partner who got beat, does that mean that Lefort gets to dump Jordan and pick a new partner next week? Since Jordan is the one who lost the match, it would only make sense. Dana Brooke pinned Casey Cassidy with her sit-out Death Valley driver move. Charlotte cut a promo backstage after the match, vowing to get her hands on Dana. We then got part two of the awesome Finn Balor video package from last week. This week, we learned that aside from wrestling, Legos are a passion of his. He's got Legos all over his apartment. I'll tell you what, if it wasn't for those frickin' abs, this guy wouldn't get laid. If that's all he does is play Legos in his frickin' apartment. But you look at this guy, it looks like he's carved out of frickin' granite, this son of a bitch. He said that SummerSlam 1995 is also his favorite pay-per-view of all time. That show had a main event, by the way, of Diesel versus King Mabel. Lots of clips of Matt Bloom, the new head trainer for NXT. Jason Albert. Tenzai. Lord Tenzai. He's had so many fucking names over the years. I still call him all 8 3/8. Jim Ross used to be obsessed with his head size. I still wonder how he even got his head measurement in the first place. But I never forgot that. He used to call him old 8 3/8. So to this day, unless his head shrunk, I know that his head is 8 3/8. So they interviewed him a lot. He was really good friends with Balor back in Japan. He gave a lot of background on their relationship and what kind of a student of the game that Balor was when he was in Japan, how hard he worked. He gave everybody a crash course on what a young boy is in Japan, which is something I never thought I'd see on a WWE show, but there you have it. The young boys they're responsible for a lot of the chores. They wash the other wrestlers' clothes. They cook their meals for them. It's like they're the whipping boys. No Bullet Club mentions, but they had plenty of Bullet Club still shots of the logo, shots of Devitt with guys like Taka Michinoku, Carl Anderson, and yes, Hiroshi Tanahashi. That's the closest we will ever get to see that man on NXT. It's Tanahashi in a still photo here. They actually did use some video footage of his New Japan matches. They gave credit to, I think it was TV Asahi for it, so that was pretty cool. This whole package was awesome. And we're getting to part 3 next week, although it just covers his time in NXT so far, so it won't be quite as cool. And I saw something where I think on July 2nd, it's like a couple days before the Japan show next weekend, on the network they're airing a half-hour Finn Balor special. My guess is that it's going to be mostly the footage from these segments that we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks, but I don't know. I don't know. Literally before I started recording, somebody sent me a note, and I looked it up, and there's some kind of Finn Balor little mini documentary airing on, I think, Thursday night, so that might be something you want to check out. They showed Twitter photos of Bull Dempsey laying around being fat, said that William Regal has ordered him to get into better shape. Hopefully they air those vignettes on TV. Zack Ryder and Mojo Rawley now have a team name. They're called the Hype Brothers. They beat Sawyer Fulton and Angelo Dawkins. Eva Marie approached William Regal backstage, said that she wanted to have a match on NXT. He said that he would give her the opportunity. He did not say when. All I can say is that I cannot wait to see the crowd reaction when this woman comes out for her first match. Forget the match. I actually think she's going to impress a lot of people, but forget the match. Just the atmosphere. When she comes out to wrestle a match in front of that crowd at Full Sail, I definitely don't want to miss that. That's going to be something else. We're about to find out if Brian Kendrick is a miracle worker. And in the main event, Finn Balor and Rhino, Kevin Owens was sitting in on commentary. I love Owens on commentary because he just completely terrorizes Byron Saxton when he's out there, so Byron doesn't really have a chance to say as much stupid shit as he normally does. He generally intimidates all of the announcers, although Corey Graves was out there kind of laughing. I think he rather enjoyed having Owens out there. I'd be in favor of having Kevin Owens just take a seat next to the bozos on Raw. You know, like just facing them. And just stare intensely at them for the 3 hours every Monday night. Yeah, he can get up, he can have his match somewhere in the middle of the show. Then he just sits right back down and continues staring at them when he's done. Balor won with the coup de grace, but Owens attacked him when the match was over. It turned into a 2-on-1 assault. Samoa Joe ran down for the save. The Reckless, apparently, Samoa Joe. Ran down for the save, and the heels all scattered. This Wednesday, they announced that it's going to be Balor and Joe against Owens and Rhino. That is the final show before the Tokyo show coming up on July the 4th.
All right, boys, like the captain said, nice and cheery so there's no panic.
TNA. I'm warning you right now, there's going to be spoilers here and there as I talk about TNA this week. They've taped the next few weeks of television already. And I'm going to be mentioning some things that have happened, so if you don't want to know anything, you can skip ahead, but where's the fun in that, right? I would stick around for this. First, let me just mention a few things here, because as I'm doing this, there's some stuff breaking. They're doing other tapings, and Kurt Angle came out for a promo and announced that he would be going away for a while to have some surgery because he has a tumor in his neck, which is terrible news if that's true. But then EC3 came out and said that he took credit for giving him the tumor, and then I think he attacked Angle. It turned into an angle is what it turned into. Doesn't mean that Kurt didn't come out and tell the truth, and then they just decided to turn it into a storyline and take him off television for a bit. So I don't know if it's legit or not. I hope it's not. but it sounds like it might be. And if that's the case, that really sucks. And I hope it doesn't turn out to be anything life-threatening for Kurt. He's had a lot of neck issues before, but this is completely different from all that, if it's true. So here's a knocking on wood, and hopefully he's okay. But let's get to the good stuff first when it comes to TNA. I watched Impact this past week, and I thought the Full Metal Mayhem match between the Wolves and the Dirty Heels was really good. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a really good match. And so with that out of the way, we may as well get to the other stuff. Jeff Jarrett is back. Jeff Jarrett made a surprise return to TNA on Impact this past week. Him and his wife Karen, they showed up. They cut a heartfelt promo. Apparently there was nothing was scripted. There was no storyline in mind. They just let them go out there and speak from the heart. And Jeff talked about what the company meant to him, starting the company all those years ago with his father, who he's now estranged from. What was funny about this was he kept naming all these great TNA stars like Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, and he mentioned Beer Money, who hasn't been together in years. All these different wrestlers and teams that you can't see anymore in TNA. And he's talking about how great it used to be. So he cuts this promo. So here's what happened. John Gaborik reached out to Jeff Jarrett last minute to get him to do Slammiversary. So it wasn't a case where Jarrett decided to swallow his pride. He just had a whole bunch of stadium shows for GFW, and he did 200 people and 300 people and 400 people, and so he decided to go to TNA and say, hey, let's work together. That's not what happened. TNA approached him. The same TNA whose executives hated this man and would supposedly mock him behind the scenes all the time. They reached out to him out of desperation because suddenly they had a pay-per-view with no main event. They decided to take Kurt Angle EC3 and put it on Impact. And also, unless they find another home, they're off TV in 3 months. So TNA is in full-on panic mode right now. So what does this all mean? Jarrett still has a minority stake in the promotion, which I always found weird, especially the way things kind of went down with him leaving and then starting his own promotion. Jeff Jarrett is still a minority owner. He still has a minority stake in TNA. So that's led a lot of people to wonder, is Jeff Jarrett going to buy TNA from the Carter family and take it back? Is there now a working agreement between TNA and Global Force Wrestling? And, here's the deal. Jeff Jarrett is not buying TNA. The two sides are going to be working together. I don't know if there's a formal working agreement, but they are going to be working together. GFW has its first TV tapings on July 24th in Vegas. TNA talent is probably going to be working those tapings. I don't know who, but there will be TNA talent working at those tapings. TV tapings, mind you, for a show that has no network. But I want to get back to Jeff Jarrett. So they announced this King of the Mountain match for Slammiversary, which is coming up tonight. They haven't done one of these King of the Mountain matches in about 5 or 6 years. It used to be a TNA staple. It's basically a reverse ladder match. Yes, from the same company that brought you the Reverse Battle Royal. The same logic applies to their finances, too. Instead of making money, they do the reverse. So you've got to pin your opponent or make him submit. That person then goes into a penalty box, and the person who pinned them or made them tap out has to grab the title, because there's usually a title on the line in these matches, and then you have to hang the title from the ceiling, the exact opposite of the way a ladder match works, where it's already hanging and you have to yank it down. I would have loved to have sat in on the acid trip in Nashville when they came up with this concept. The title, by the way, that they're fighting for, it's not the WWE. It's not the shit ain't the WWE title. It ain't the TNA World title. It's not the X title. No, the title they're competing for is the brand new King of the Mountain Championship that they created just for this match. The idea that TNA thinks Jeff Jarrett is enough of a draw to where he's the only name they announced on television for this match. They didn't announce anybody else. They said there's going to be a King of the Mountain match, and Jeff Jarrett says, I'm entering myself in the King of the Mountain match, and I'm going to win. There was not one single mention of any of the other four or five, however many people it is, that are in this match. Just Jarrett. So the idea that TNA thinks Jarrett is such a big draw where they could just announce his name and not bother announcing anybody else is so TNA. It's just so TNA. I can't even say it surprises me. It's exactly what I would expect them to do. Now, they've since announced Matt Hardy, Eric Young, Drew Galloway, and Bobby Roode are also going to be in that match. Would have been nice of them to mention that on TV. But they apparently think that people are going to pay $59.95 or whatever it is to see Jeff Jarrett. Okay. Jarrett put a video up on the Global Force YouTube channel showing him pulling up to the Impact Zone, meeting with everybody backstage, hugging Dixie Carter, and the two of them smiling like a couple of long-lost chums. I wasn't buying any of this. Those two would just as soon knife each other in the back if they had the chance. But let me give you two examples of why TNA is so mismanaged and is such a terrible company, okay? First of all, when they showed the TNA roster sitting in the back watching, Jarrett and Karen were in the ring cutting a promo at the time, the most telling thing to me of everybody they showed was Tyrus. Tyrus did not look happy at all. In fact, his head was down the entire time. He wouldn't even lift his head up to look at the monitor. He was looking at the floor. He was looking at anything but what was going on in the ring. The deal with Tyrus is he was originally booked to wrestle on those GFW stadium shows that they just did. And at the last second, TNA threatened him and said they would fire him if he didn't pull out. Because he was supposed to be able to work the shows, right? So long as they weren't taped for TV. That's always been the policy. Look, we're not running a lot of live events anymore, so you guys are free to go book your own indie shots as long as it's not on iPay-per-view or television. You're free to go book yourself. Because TNA, they have TV tapings every few months. This pay-per-view this weekend is the first pay-per-view in like almost a year. They don't have any shows. How are these guys supposed to make money? So Tyrus went out and he booked himself on the GFW house show tour. He wasn't booking himself for the TV tapings. And so out of spite for Jeff Jarrett, who they now love. Oh, he's the patron saint. He's the returning legend. We love Jeff Jarrett. Yay! These people fucking hated this guy's guts a few weeks ago. And out of spite, they threatened to fire this poor guy unless he pulled out, which he did. You think TNA compensated him for the lost booking? I think the better question would be, did TNA compensate him at all? Period. They took money out of this guy's pocket for no good reason. Now this fucker has to sit there, completely blindsided by all of this. TNA didn't tell any of the talent what was going on. Taz even said on his podcast, he spoke to guys in TNA that he's still friendly with. Morale is in the toilet because TNA doesn't tell him anything. And so Tyrus has to sit there watching Jeff Jarrett cut a promo on TNA television for a match that he's now going to headline on a TNA pay-per-view. You know this guy had to be seething. Just seething. And I don't blame him. I said on Twitter, I'd say this company is a total Mickey Mouse operation, but that would be offensive to cartoon mice, who would probably run a better wrestling promotion than these fools would. So, you want another example of how fucked up this company is? This comes directly from Brian Fritz with the Sporting News, so TNA can't go blaming the dirt sheets for this one. According to Fritz, TNA is once again behind on paying their production people. What is this, like the third time in the past year now? Fourth? TNA held a meeting backstage at the tapings with members of their production staff to let them know that they will not be getting their checks for the May tapings until July 15th at the earliest. At the earliest. How much you want to bet they don't get paid on July 15th? And here's maybe the most galling part of all of this. Last month, their head of production left the company. He went to go take a position somewhere else. And so to replace him, TNA hired Ron and Don Harris. Remember them? They were the Blue Brothers, DOA, Creative Control in WCW. Yeah, they sucked. And they were there in the early years of TNA as well. They were even nice enough to show their SS Nazi tattoos, and one of them wore an SS shirt on a TNA pay-per-view once upon a time. Couple of real gems these guys are. So they're now in charge of the production staff. So they tell the workers they're not being paid. And then supposedly the Harris brothers told them, if you're not happy, just shake our hands and walk away. Basically saying, if you don't like it, then quit. Here's what I get out of the whole thing. I mean, forget the Nazi stuff. What's most galling about the Harris brothers being brought in, because you look at the Harris brothers, there are always a couple of like big biker dudes, very intimidating, right? So they bring these guys in. You ask yourself, why the hell would they hire the Harris twins to run their production department? Why them? Of all things, why bring them back for that? Here's what I get out of this. Okay, they're doing it because they're tired of the production people threatening to go on strike. They're worried about them growing a set of balls and actually walking out on these people, which I wish they would have done already. And they've threatened before. It was last year, the year before, there was that incident where they were going to stage a walkout. They were going to leave TNA high and dry at a time when they were about to do TV tapings, and Dixie had to get her mom or something to go cut checks for these people. So they were tired of that. So they hired 8-Ball and Q-Ball over there to effectively shut these people down, to shut them up. It's pure intimidation. That's what I think is going on here. This is how TNA conducts its business practices. Speaking of Brian Fritz, he dropped a few other bombs this weekend. Two of TNA's biggest names, including a TNA original, who's been with the company since 2002, are on their way out of TNA. James Storm asked for and was granted his release. He's going to be gone after the Slammiversary pay-per-view tonight. The fact that James Storm would choose to leave TNA, that says a lot. I mean, that's a big deal. It's one thing to get a guy like a low-key who left the company, but for James Storm, who's been there since practically day one, former world champ, one of their biggest stars. I mean, he wasn't in like a... Actually, you know what? I shouldn't say he wasn't in one of the top angles now, because he kind of was. The stuff with him and Magnus until he turned into an attempted murderer was some of the more compelling stuff on Impact in recent months. So the fact that he would leave, that's a big deal. And remember last month, you know, Storm was interviewed on some podcast. This was around the time all those Destination America rumors were swirling. Meltzer had filed the first report in his newsletter that the network had decided to cancel Impact this fall. And they asked Storm about it, and he said, "All I know is I was told by TNA management there was nothing to worry about." And he stood by his bosses. And then, like, the very next day, Dixie Carter held that conference call. And just, they made Storm look like such a complete idiot for believing what they said to him. The guy probably felt like such a fool after that. So now he's gone, after 13 years with the promotion. The other person on his way out is Magnus, who's been feuding with James Storm. In fact, Storm, like I said, tried to murder the man's wife on television a few weeks ago, pushed her onto the train tracks in that classic TNA angle. Classic as in classically shit. Magnus was another homegrown TNA talent. He had been with the promotion since 2008. He and Storm are leaving because TNA, again, they barely run any shows anymore, so they're not making as much money as they used to, or making as much money as they could working on the indies, without being tied down to an exclusive contract. From the sounds of it, everything was amicable. Storm may be invited back to work some of their TV tapings in the future, maybe as early as next month. He's open to the idea. So it almost sounds like, all right, we're not gonna hold you under contract, and we're not really doing live events, but we'd love to have you back for TVs and maybe, I don't know, pay-per-view now and then. And again, he seems to be, from what I can gather, open to the idea. So it's not like... tenuous split. Like, it's an amicable split, but he is no longer a contracted TNA talent. A guy like Magnus. Magnus has taken dates with Global Force Wrestling, but he's not a GFW guy. He is a free agent. He can work wherever he wants. I don't know if he would be as open to working with TNA or not, but he, too, is a free agent after Slammiversary. I would imagine there's probably some kind of 30-day non-compete. Can't just, you know, show up at NXT next week or anything like that. But after a month or so, hey, these guys are free and clear to go work wherever they want, sign with whoever they want to. Austin Aries is another one. His contract is up after Slammiversary, and he's going to be in the same boat where he's going to be a free agent. Now, maybe he would want to work TVs for TNA, but who knows? Maybe he's tired. Maybe he's sick and tired of TNA. And if he wants to go back to Ring of Honor, he can go back to Ring of Honor. If WWE were to show interest in him for NXT, which I think probably would make sense, he can go to NXT. This is TNA's future right here. This is not the last we're going to be hearing of this. There's going to be more names. I would expect a guy like Angle or Jeff Hardy, you know, the guys like that are probably going to they're going to have their contract. Believe me, TNA's not going to go to Kurt Angle and say, hey, listen, I know you just signed a new deal, but we're going to cut you loose. We want you to still work for us, but you can go work wherever you want. With Kurt Angle, they're not going to do that. Actually, it'd be kind of funny if they did that with Bram, since they signed and re-signed this guy to like four different fucking contracts in the last year. He'll be the next one. But this is their future right here. Because they cannot afford to pay their talent, this is their future. Speaking of Aries, they're doing an Aries versus Davey Richards match at Slammiversary. The winner gets to pick the stipulation for the fifth and final match in the Best of Five series between the Wolves and the Dirty Heels, which is going to air on Impact this Wednesday, and which has already been taped. The finals have already been taped. A winner has been crowned. Which means when these men go to the ring tonight on the pay-per-view, in the same building, in front of a lot of the same fans, where the match has already been taped, they're going to have them pick the stipulation for a tag match that's already happened. And for those of you who want to know, it's a 30-minute Ironman match on Impact this week for the tag team titles, which actually sounds amazing for a match involving those two teams, so I'm going to go out of my way to check that out. Kurt Angle is not on the show tonight. He will defend the TNA title against EC3 this Wednesday on Impact, which has also been taped already. I read the Impact spoilers for the next couple of weeks, and all I can say is if any of this stuff was the brainchild of Billy Corgan, they need to smash a pumpkin over his head. They actually brought Dixie Carter back to television as a babyface. I forget heel or babyface. They brought Dixie Carter back to television, period. This company is hopeless. Hopeless! And Jeff Jarrett is going to be the TNA Hall of Fame inductee this year. And interestingly enough, normally they do the Hall of Fame deal at Bound for Glory in October. But from what I read with the spoilers, and I just took a look at this, again, literally as I started recording here, Jarrett's already in. I mean, they did the induction on Impact. I guess it's going to air the end of July, beginning of August. So they're not even waiting until October, which is very telling, I think, given that their future is so tied to their fate, their television fate, and Destination America is still, you know, giving them the boot as of September. I don't know if one has anything to do with the other, if they have just as pessimistic a view of their future as a lot of other people do, or maybe they just decided to do things differently with the Hall of Fame, but very interesting. They're not waiting until October. They did the induction on Impact. In case you're keeping track, let's see if we can get all this straight. Gunnar and Sam Shaw were both let go. It was not their choosing. TNA let them go, so they're gone. Low-key left on his own. In his place, Hernandez is back. He joined the Beatdown Clan on the show this past week, which means he's officially done with Lucha Underground. He got to play Rick Rude on TV this week. He appeared on two different wrestling shows on the same night. He was on Lucha Underground, and then he showed up on Impact. Vader, yes, Vader, showed up on Impact to wrestle Bram. I would not be surprised if they just stuck John Gaborik in a Vader mask as a way to save some money. And Matt Morgan returned to TNA to save Vader, or maybe Vader Gaborik, from an attack by Bram. And so Matt Morgan and Bram are going to have a match at Slammiversary. And Bully Ray is back as well. He is the new authority figure that's going to be revealed by Dixie Carter on television in a few weeks. Yes, the man who terrorized her for months and months and put her through a table and broke her back. And she made him the GM. Talk about art imitating life. We already know this woman makes crappy decisions in real life behind the scenes, but now they've turned it into a storyline. It's not enough that she makes terrible decisions behind the scenes. She actually has to make terrible decisions on the air as well. Which leaves one more thing here. I saved the worst for last. Vince Russo. I haven't mentioned his name in a while because I don't want to give him any more publicity, but this was too good to pass up. He wrote a very whiny column claiming that he emailed Dixie Carter, John Gaborik, and Billy Corgan 2 weeks ago offering his creative services free of charge. He said he would work for free because he wants to help save TNA from its impending doom this September. And the only person who emailed him back was Billy Corgan. Otherwise, they completely ignored him, and this upset him greatly. This was a personal offense to him. This fucking guy. They ignored you because they don't like you. He also revealed that Jeff Jarrett is no longer friends with him. He's not your friend because he doesn't like you. Do you see a pattern here? And haven't these people learned from their mistakes when it comes to sending emails? It's not exactly TNA's strong suit, nor is it Russo's strong suit. Use smoke signal. It's a lot safer. So that's your TNA update. I don't know what the end game is here with this TNA GFW thing. From Jarrett's perspective, it's a no-lose situation. He's got a dead brand right out of the gate. He needs to do whatever he can to build brand awareness for Global Force Wrestling and let people know that it exists and what it is and who's on the roster and how they can see it, how they can find it. So for him, if TNA is willing to let him go on television wearing a Global Force Wrestling shirt and talk about Global Force Wrestling and put that in people's brains, good for Jeff Jarrett. It's free publicity on cable television. Television that he himself does not yet have and may never have. So for him, it's, hey, it's a no-lose situation. For TNA, this reeks of desperation. This reeks of, the ship is sinking. The ship is sinking, folks. It's going down. It's been going down for a long time. This is the slowest sinking ship I've ever seen in my life. But this, the ship is going down here. The rats are jumping off the sinking ship. And whether it's the stuff with people getting paid late or cutting guys loose because they can't afford to pay them and letting them go elsewhere and some of the boneheaded things that they've done. I mean, the Tyrus thing to me is one of the more egregious examples here. It really is. I don't care how last minute all this shit came together. That to me, just like hearing that story is offensive. But the ship is going down here. It's just a matter, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Let's talk about a promotion that at least has some actual life to it. Ring of Honor on Destination America. This was probably, I can't say it was perfect, but this was as close to a perfect one-hour wrestling show as you're probably ever going to find. There wasn't a whole lot in the way of like skits or interviews, promos, anything like that. I guess that's what it was lacking. But if you're just looking for fun, kick-ass matches, this is the show for you. You open the show with Roderick Strong against Shinsuke Nakamura. You can't go wrong there. Roddy is just on a roll this year. He's kicking ass. Nakamura is Nakamura. He's probably my favorite wrestler or one of my favorite wrestlers in the whole world right now. I don't even get to watch this guy every single week. But whenever I watch him, it's a lot of fun. So they had an awesome match, goes without saying. Nakamura won with the Bomae knee. The middle of the show, there was a match with Michael Elgin and Ghetto. Yeah, it was a match. It was a nice little buffer, I guess, between the opener and the main event. Kind of bring people down a little bit before the main course, which was 6-man tag team match, the Chaos Faction, the Rainmaker, Kazuchika Okada, and Roppongi Vice, Trent Beretta and Rocky Romero, against Bullet Club, including AJ Styles, who is the reigning IWGP champion, and the Young Bucks, who had Doc Gallows and Machine Gun Carl Anderson in their corner. This was the most fun I have had watching a pro wrestling match on TV all year. This was unbelievable. You need to go out of your way to track down this match. That is your homework for this week. Professor Solomonster says, watch this match, and then when it's over, watch it again. This started out as a perfectly good pro wrestling 6-man tag. You know, the heels get heat on the baby faces for a while, which was Beretta for most of it. Then comes the hot tag, then comes the comeback, and then it just degenerates into pure mayhem. AJ and Okada are going to meet in Osaka for the IWGP title on July 5th. So the crowd was hot when they were in there together, because they're two of the biggest stars in the world right now. Crowd was really hot for the entire thing. And by the end, they were going out of their minds. We got to see a Rainmaker pose, which is always fun, complete with the camera zoom out like they do in New Japan. That was awesome. AJ hit a wicked Bloody Sunday brainbuster on Okada. Just dropped him right on his freaking head. Went to set up for the Styles Clash, but Okada reversed it. Looked like he was going to backdrop AJ over. But somehow, from a position, he almost... I guess the way I could describe it is he almost had him up for like an Alabama slam kind of thing, but somehow he spun Styles around into position for a tombstone pile driver. Hit the pile driver, doesn't go for the cover, he wants to finish him off with the Rainmaker, but when he goes for it, AJ ducks the clothesline, Young Bucks come in to break it up. I'm going to skip ahead here a few minutes to the finish. I'm going to try my best to describe what happened here in the finish, the last like 2 minutes of this match, which was insane. So all six guys are toe-to-toe in the ring. They're trading blows back and forth. We get stereo super kicks from AJ and the Young Bucks. Roppongi Vice goes down, but not Okada. He fires up, fights back, but he gets nailed with two more super kicks by the Bucks and a Pele kick from AJ for good measure, all at the same time. All three of them hit him with their moves all at once, and Okada falls out of the ring, so he's dead. Now it's Bullet Club and Beretta. AJ picks up Trent Beretta in a pile driver position, holds him there for the Bucks to do their Indy Taker spike pile driver. So this guy's been pile driven, okay? But AJ still holds him up, doesn't let him go. He hands him off to one of the Young Bucks in a tombstone position for the Meltzer driver. If you've never seen the Meltzer driver before, one Buck holds the guy in a tombstone position while the other Buck does a springboard flip off the ropes and spikes the guy down into the mat. So that's back-to-back pile drivers for poor Beretta. This guy will never walk again after this. But that's not enough. They haven't punished this poor man enough. They still have Beretta held in the tombstone position, again, like AJ before. They didn't let him go, so he's still upside down. They hand him back off to AJ Styles, who sets him up for the Styles Clash, but not before the Bucks deliver a pair of super kicks to Beretta's chest. Then he hits the Styles Clash, and that, my friends, is what you call a homicide. This man is dead, and he ain't getting up. Bullet Club gets the pin, and I'm exhausted just talking about it. This was so awesome. It was just so much fun to watch this. And everybody in the match is so good. They're such professionals. They're so freaking awesome at what they do. Everything was crisp. It just was so smooth. You know, one move to the next, one spot to the next. I mean, I guess if you're the kind of person who hates, spot fests, I mean, I guess to some extent you could say that's what this was. I just thought this was great. I counted about a dozen super kicks in this match, for those counting, from the Young Bucks. But it wasn't just that, you know, it wasn't just a bunch of kicks. I know some people don't get the Young Bucks, some people don't like them, but you can't get six guys with this much talent in the same ring at the same time and not have a great match. This was one of the best matches I've seen all year, easily the most fun. I just can't say enough good things about it. So if you can track it down online, do so. You will not regret it. Lucha Underground. They opened the show with the announcement that Johnny Mundo will face off with Alberto El Patron at Ultima Lucha on August 5th, which I just realized I will not be around for. Fuck. Going to be away at the Baseball Hall of Fame that week. That sucks. Now I gotta try to avoid spoilers for 48 hours until I come home. Superfly pinned Sexy Star with a sit-out powerbomb. And you guys, if you listen to this show for any length of time, you know I'm not a fan of the intergender stuff. Yeah, I mean, if it's part of a six-person tag or whatever, you get Ivelisse in there, she throws some punches at a guy, whatever, that's fine. But these straight one-on-one matches, I don't like them. If I had to pick one thing for them to do away with in Season 2, if there is a Season 2, still no announcement, by the way, it would be these stupid intergender singles matches. Pentagon Jr. came out. He was introduced as part of a five-way match for one of those ancient Aztec medallions. He gets on the mic before the match, basically blows the match off. He says, I don't give a fuck about these medallions. Well, he didn't say it that way, but he said he doesn't care about some medallion. What he wants is revenge for his master. Revenge on the man who cost him a sacrifice a few weeks back when he tried to break someone's arm. I think it was Sexy Star. And that's Vampiro. And Vamp stands up at the announce desk. Pentagon goes over, starts pushing him around, punking him out. Vampiro shoves him back. Vampiro starts to take his shirt off. Officials come out to break him up. Pentagon heads to the back. This whole segment was great. The crowd was completely electric for it. They wanted to see Vampiro kick this guy's ass so bad. Vampiro was the biggest babyface in the world when this segment was over. Now, I assume any week now we're going to get the announcement of a match between them at Ultima Lucha. And that's going to be amazing. Just the crowd. If the crowd went crazy for this, I can only imagine how they would react if you got these two guys together for a grudge match. So instead of a five-way, it was now a four-way for the medallion. Marty the Moth, the Mac, Aerostar, and they call him Cage. Mac and Cage are two very large men, in case you didn't know this already. Okay, the Mac, very talented, but also big guy. Cage, very, very talented, very agile for a guy as big and jacked up as he is, but he's a big guy. Mac gave Cage an exploder suplex on the apron at one point during this match. How this man didn't die, I have no idea. That is insane beyond words. Aerostar won the match. He definitely was not the one I would have picked to win. Or not that I would have picked him, but not the person I thought was going to win. But he won. He won the medallion. He did his rope-to-rope Hurricanrana, which seems like a lot of work for nothing. Just jump up to the top rope and do a Hurricanrana. But this guy walks from one end of the ring to the other by the ropes and then hits the Hurricanrana on poor Marty the Moth. Followed that up with the old Rey Mysterio dead body splash off the ropes. Puts all of his weight just crashing down on Marty the Moth. No arms, just lands on the guy. Aerostar's not a big guy, but I don't care how big or small you are. When you come crashing down on somebody, that's going to knock the wind out of you. And he got the win. We got a vignette backstage with the Trios champs working out together and complaining about stuff, as they always do. Suddenly, Katrina appears. She gets up in Ivelisse's face. I thought she was going to give Ivelisse the lick of death, and I almost had to excuse myself. But she did not lick her. There's always time. There's always season two. So instead, the Disciples of Death, the goons in the skull masks, they suddenly popped up behind Ivelisse, Son of Havoc, and Angelico. And we don't really see it. Actually, I guess we did. I think they punched him in the face, and they kind of went to black. But what we see next is Katrina with Mil Muertes. Mil Muertes came from out of nowhere, and the two of them are walking out of the gym. And behind them on the ground are the Trios Tag Team Champions all laid out. Main event was Drago against Mil Muertes, with the winner meeting Prince Puma for the Lucha Underground title at Ultima Lucha. Before the match, Hernandez, he came out of nowhere, whipped Drago with a belt, and left him laying, and then he left to go to TNA, apparently. So they had a fun brawl. Muertes just killed this guy, finished him off with the flatliner, and so Mil Muertes will challenge Prince Puma for the championship on August 5th. Puma walked out with Conan, started walking down the staircase. Conan grabbed him by the arm. He stopped him. He said, no, we're not going to do this tonight. And so we got a stare down from afar, and that's how we went off the air. A good show this week, as always, with Lucha Underground, but I got to give the best show honors to Ring of Honor. You cannot have a show with Nakamura and a main event like the one that they had on ROH TV and not give them best show honors. It just can't happen. It's impossible. So I would say, I'm not going to do this every week, it's hard sometimes to rank these shows, but, ROH number one, Lucha Underground number two this week, NXT number three, I'd put Impact in number four, and Raw in the basement, dead last in number five. Raw had no good matches this week. TNA at least had that Full Metal Mayhem match, and there was nothing on Raw that came even close to being as good as that match. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, please email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Let's just get right into it here. Brian from Orlando. I was thinking about a wrestler being validated by winning a world title. In your opinion, does Bray Wyatt really need to be a world champion to be considered great? I compare him to guys like Jake Roberts and The Undertaker, and that his persona and character does not really lend itself to being a world champion. So does winning a world title really validate a guy? No. Look at Roddy Piper. He never won a world title in a major promotion like WWE or WCW. Would you say Roddy Piper is not one of the all-time greats? I mean, think about this. The Miz is a former WWE champion. Would you say that The Miz is going to go down as one of the all-time greats? Jack Swagger, former World Heavyweight Champion. Is he going to be an all-time great? One doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the other. You can be great and not be a world champion. Clearly, though, the Wyatt character, he wants to be a world champion because it's the whole basis of this feud that we now have with him and Roman Reigns, right? He cost Roman Reigns the win at Money in the Bank because he was upset that Reigns beat him and took away his chance to be in the Money in the Bank match. That's the first time they've ever kind of sort of acknowledged the world title is a motivation for the Wyatt character. That kind of flies in the face of all those people who have written into me, and there have been a few, who have emailed me. They've been trying to convince me that Bray Wyatt doesn't care about the world title. It doesn't fit his character. He doesn't care about winning the championship. That's not what drives him, they said. This was months ago when I got these emails and I went back and forth with these people by email. I wonder how those people feel now. Robert from Oviedo, Florida. I recently saw an off-the-record interview with Mean Gene Okerlund, Bobby the Brain Heenan, and Rowdy Roddy Piper. Well, I assume this has to be several years old then. They were talking about the state of wrestling, and all three had different opinions about it. Gene Okerlund argued that wrestling is cyclical, and we are currently in a lull, but wrestling will bounce back, and will eventually enter a new boom period. Bobby Heenan, on the other hand, thinks the glory days of wrestling are gone, and the industry will never be what it once was. Roddy Piper says that wrestling is currently in a growth period because the global expansion of WWE is such that it's creating greater worldwide popularity for the product than ever before, despite a lack of interest here in the U.S. Which of these three opinions do you think is the most factually accurate? Is this a lull? Are the best years behind us? Or are we in a period of unprecedented global popularity? Who is right, Okerlund, Heenan, or Piper? Well, I think there's a little bit of truth in each of those viewpoints. Wrestling has been cyclical in the past. There's been ups and downs, peaks and valleys. Wrestling is never going to be what it once was. And WWE is more global now than they've ever been. They're in a lot of new markets. That doesn't mean they're as popular as ever, but they are in a lot of new markets. They have expanded. So I think all three of them are right in their own way. I remember only a few years ago, for whatever reason, WWE was white hot in Italy. There was like this big wrestling boom in Italy, but that boom is long over. Of the three, I say Bobby Heenan is probably the most accurate. I think the so-called glory days are over, and wrestling is not going to be what it once was. Now, don't confuse that with me saying that wrestling can't be great, and it can't be fun, and popular, and mainstream, because sometimes all it takes is one hot celebrity angle, or one guy like a Hogan or an Austin to connect with the crowd. But I think wrestling as we knew it will never be that way again. The business has changed. Social media has played a big role in that. The way they're training guys now down at the Performance Center, the scripted promos, don't look at the camera, don't play to the crowd, that kind of thing. It's never going to be that way again. It's never going to be that way again. And I, personally, I don't think wrestling will ever be as hot as it was during the Monday Night Wars, because there is no number two to compete with WWE. It was that competition that created the wrestling boom of the late 90s. If there's no Nitro to compete with Raw and there's no NWO to kick their ass in the ratings, I doubt Vince McMahon pushes his product as far to the edge as he did. Vince was always about, we're a family product, and all the goofy cartoon characters. You think Vince one day on his own, just for shits and giggles, would have been like, yeah, you know what, let's have people go out there. Let's have women walking around half naked with their tits hanging out. Let's have Shawn Michaels go out there and moon the crowd. Let's go out there and have Steve Austin start flipping people off and cussing up a storm on television. I mean, think of all the stuff that happened during that period, all the stuff that DX did. I mean, the women posing for Playboy. You think just for the hell of it he would have had them do that? Of course not. He was pushed up against the wall. He decided to go this way instead of that way. And that's what we got. And as a teenage boy, it was a fuckload of fun, I'll tell you that much. I'd be lying if I told you it wasn't fun to see all that kind of stuff at that age. Yeah, but if that doesn't happen, though, if there's no Nitro and there's no NWO, I doubt that he follows Eric Bischoff's lead and moves to 12 pay-per-views a year, which they only did after seeing how much success WCW had with it. Think of everything that happened during that period. It was exciting. It was an exciting time to be a wrestling fan. What's going to happen next week? Who's going to jump ship? It's never going to be as popular as it was then. Fives and sixes on TV. It's like they combined for like 10 or 11 million viewers on a Monday night watching wrestling. Are you kidding me? Even TV. Look at what's happening with TV now. Look how much TV has changed. Forget the cord cutters and all the people that are ditching cable for Netflix and Hulu. You've got so many more channels now than you had back then. You've got DVR. You've got 3 hours of Raw every single week. 3 hours is way too long. If WWE was at its peak You could argue, hey, let's do 3 hours. This is going pretty well. Let's add one more hour. I love this show. 2 hours is not enough. I want more. I don't hear anyone. I don't hear one person saying, man, I wish Raw was longer. That's like going to the dentist for a root canal and he finishes up and the Novocaine wears off and you're like, man, that's it. I wanted to go another 30 minutes. And, you know, again, Raw going longer, that's killing the product too. I mean, it's the overexposure. Same thing started to happen even in the Attitude Era. That's where it started. You want to know where this overexposure problem goes back? It goes back 16, 17 years. You know, WCW added Thunder. Bischoff didn't want it, but wasn't his decision. They became a victim of their own success in a lot of ways. Wrestling brought in great ratings for Turner, so what do? Add another show. And it started to kill them. 3 hours of Nitro, it started to kill them. I mean, there's so many factors now, and you don't have that sense of urgency when you watch Raw like you did back then, when there was that competition. Wrestling, it's never going to be what it was before March of 2001. It will never be that way again. And that doesn't mean that wrestling can't be fun. There's some great wrestling on TV. NXT's been, you know, it's a little bit stale lately, but I enjoy watching it. Ring of Honor is very good. Lucha Underground is amazing. I mean, there's more wrestling on TV today than ever before. And WWE is making more money now every single year than they ever have before because the company is so much bigger. It's this monster that it's just become. But that doesn't mean that WWE is hot. Doesn't mean wrestling is hot. But I think Heenan had it right. That's why they call him the brain. This comes from Alex. Wrestlers outside of WWE do all types of crazy high-risk stuff during a match, and they seem to come out of it uninjured. While wrestlers within WWE are forced to wrestle a very neutered, highly choreographed, low-risk style, and yet they're still getting injured left and right. And I'm talking serious injuries. Why is that? Have you or anyone else noticed this, or is it just me? I don't think it's so much that indie guys or, you know, guys outside WWE rarely get injured. I think, you know, look, you've got a lot of independent wrestlers who get hurt, and they don't tell anybody, because they don't have to. They answer to themselves. They are their own boss. So they don't tell anybody. And it's the macho mentality also of, you know, it still works, so tape it up and get back out there, right? You know, unlike working for WWE, if you're an indie guy making your own bookings, you're not getting a base salary. You're not getting a downside guarantee on your deal. You don't work. You don't get paid. So unless your arm is about to fall off or you can't get up out of bed, I think the mentality for a lot of people is, I'm tough. It's no big deal. Tape it up and it'll be fine. Believe me, they get hurt a lot more than you think. You're just not reading news reports about it like you would somebody in WWE when they get diagnosed with an injury because they keep it to themselves. Look at Nigel McGuinness in Ring of Honor. And people knew how fucked up his biceps were. But I guess he didn't have the money to have them both operated on. He was in the middle of the biggest run of his life at the time. So he taped them up. He had tears in both of his arms, both of his biceps. He taped them up. He kept on going. He needed surgery. But he didn't get it. Now, unfortunately for him, that's what ended up costing him his shot with WWE. It cost him his big break. Because they had him, they signed him, or they were going to sign him. And then his medicals came back and set off all kinds of red flags and alarm bells. He would have come in at the exact same time as Brian. Him and Brian both had their big farewells in Ring of Honor at the same time. He'd be there right now in WWE if it wasn't for him, you know, not getting his arms taken care of when he should have. So, yeah, you know, it's weird to hear about torn biceps and blown out knees in WWE when the guys in Lucha Underground are doing frickin' balcony dives from 30 feet up in the air, but that's wrestling. You could take an insanely stupid bump and get up and be totally fine. Jeff Hardy's made a career of doing it. Jeff Hardy just broke his leg for the first time, the first major injury of Jeff Hardy's career a couple of months ago, and it wasn't even in the wrestling ring. It's a frickin' dirt bike accident. Think of the crazy shit this guy has done in the last 15 years, 20 years, and that was his first major injury. That was the first time he ever had surgery of any kind. But you give somebody a basic arm drag like John Cena did with Mr. Kennedy all those years ago, and you tear your pec muscle. Shit happens. There's no rhyme or reason for it. Let's see here. This person didn't give their name, but I'll use it anyway. As an angle, Which one was superior, Vader's assault on Gorilla Monsoon or Brock Lesnar's assault on Michael Cole? And is Brock Lesnar the Vader of today, or is he superior, and why? I like both angles, but the Monsoon one was more impactful. That was Vader's Raw debut. He killed the storyline president of the company. You know, a guy that was retired, he hadn't gotten physical on TV, probably since the day he retired. I don't really remember Gorilla really ever getting physical, except that one time when he threw Bobby Heenan out of Raw. He was also a guy people liked. People liked Gorilla Monsoon. Nobody likes Michael Cole. That's the difference. In fact, when Brock lifted Michael Cole up for the F5, the place exploded. There were people rejoicing when he killed this man. Now, I think fans these days are too cute for their own good when it comes to cheering all the heels, but in this case, there is a genuine dislike of Michael Cole and how annoying he can be. When Monsoon got attacked, people were shocked, they were dismayed, they were upset, they booed. Oh my God, that's Gorilla Monsoon! You had Vince McMahon on commentary doing this great sell job of what a heinous act this was, what a heinous attack on the part of Vader. I remember Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette was Vader's handler on TV. He was supposed to control this guy. Even he couldn't stop him. Vader shoved his own manager down, and then he beat the crap out of Monsoon. Much better angle. Much more effective. And I don't think we saw Monsoon again until WrestleMania 2 months later. That's why they brought in Roddy Piper to be the interim president until Monsoon returned. Michael Cole, who is, you know, I will say this, he is younger than Gorilla Monsoon was when they did that angle. I'll give them that. But Michael Cole was gone 1 week, and he was back on TV the next week, showing no ill effects of anything. And the guy's a freaking announcer. He's not even a real athlete. So you tell me which was more impactful. Now, the second part of your question, is Lesnar the Vader of today, or is he better than Vader? They're both great. Vader was awesome in his prime. Not so much this past Thursday. But in his prime, he was awesome. Vader is probably the best super heavyweight, I would say, in the history of wrestling. See, but that's, I would not consider The Undertaker a super heavyweight. Otherwise, I may slot him higher just because his body of work is so impressive for such a longer period of time. And the guy got better in the ring with age. The Undertaker's a freak. His matches only got better the older he got. But I don't really consider The Undertaker a super heavyweight, so we'll put him off to the side. You know, Vader was doing moonsaults off the top rope. He was taking crazy bumps for a guy his size. He was a freaking beast in that ring. It would hurt me just to watch some of the things he would do to people in there. He threw some of the most brutal punches you've ever seen, which is a big problem, I think, with some of the guys in WWE, some of the top guys. One top guy in particular. You see people throwing punches, and it's like, oh, God. Vader, I think the reason his punches probably look so real is he didn't pull his punches. He didn't know how to. He's like, all right, I'm going to punch you in the fucking face now, and you're going to take it. And that's what he did. And he would throw forearms, and oh my God, it was brutal. It was just brutal to watch. Brock Lesnar is the closest thing we have to a Vader right now in wrestling. I would agree with that. Is he better? He's a better athlete, but I can't really tell you he's better than Vader. I like them both equally. And they're very similar, you know, two Smash Mouth guys, two guys who, when they make their entrance, you know bad shit's about to go down. It's a different feeling than anybody else on the roster when they come out. Neither one was ever a great promo, which is why they both had mouthpieces, right? For Vader, it was Harley Race. Later on, it was Jim Cornette. Although Vader's WWE run was just freaking trash. When I think of Vader, I'm talking the NWA, WCW Vader, not so much the WWE Vader, who was always hurt. I mean, shit, he debuted hurt. Gotta cut the guy some slack. That's why they did the angle with Monsoon, and they suspended him to get Vader off TV for a couple of months because he had to have surgery. He had this lingering shoulder injury from his WCW days. Vader, I would say Vader probably was a better talker than Brock, but he still had people doing most of the talking for him, as does Brock. They're both big guys that can do some pretty non-big guy things in the ring. Brock at one time would hit a picture-perfect shooting star press. I know WrestleMania he didn't, but if you've ever seen video of him back in OVW, he hit that shit perfectly. Perfectly. Vader, like I said, doing moonsaults off the top rope, and Vader was a lot bigger than Brock was, even when Brock was younger. Vader took good bumps. Brock Lesnar takes awesome bumps. He overbumps. So for me, it's a wash. It's a wash between the two of them. I can't put one over the other. But I'll tell you what. You want to know my fantasy matchup? Okay, I'll give you an answer here to that question. Not that you asked, but I'll tell you anyway. What the one fantasy match I would have loved to have gone back and seen with two guys in their prime one-on-one. I mean, there's a lot of matches I think we could all wish we could go back and see. You know, Bret Hart against Kurt Angle in their prime. That'd be awesome. You want to know the match I want to see? Brock Lesnar against Vader. That's a match I would have paid a lot of money to see. What a war the two of those guys could have had. Maz Gambardella. That's a mouthful. I was watching a shoot interview with Biff Busick, and he asked a question that you may want to weigh in on. In your opinion, who drew more money in the peaks of their established career, Shawn Michaels or Eddie Guerrero? Shawn Michaels. Has to be Shawn Michaels. When he was on top as the WWE champion, I know that he didn't mean much to the ratings back in 96, but he was a big mover when it came to the house shows. It's a weird thing, like, ratings for WWE in 1996, I mean, relatively, especially compared to like what WCW was doing, they really weren't that great. But at the house shows, he was a great draw. He was a great draw as the champion. He moved merchandise. He sold tickets. And I'm willing to bet he meant more on top when it came to pay-per-view main events. Eddie, you see, it was a different time. Eddie got big during the brand split. So he was never really the man the way that Shawn Michaels was the man. He was never the face of the company. Eddie was not a big ticket mover because if he was, they wouldn't have taken the title off him. I mean, he was really kind of down in the dumps. He put a lot of the blame on himself when the SmackDown brand wasn't doing all that great. He put so much pressure on himself, I think they took the title off him just because of that. Because they said, look, you're putting way too much pressure on yourself. It's not your fault. And they took the championship off him. And they wanted to make a new heel. So, you know, JBL suddenly became the John Bradshaw Layfield character, and they used Eddie to help put him over. But SmackDown was not doing that well in the months that Eddie was the champion. And he felt responsible when business took a dip during that time. Now, I think it's unfair to lay all that on him, but he was the champion at that time, and business did not go up as a result. His time on top also, far less than the amount of time that Shawn Michaels had on top. Who knows what kind of draw Eddie might have been as a main event heel had he turned on Batista in late 05, early 06, which I still think is where they were headed. We'll never know. I know everybody loved Eddie Guerrero. I did too. I miss him a lot. I really do. I miss that guy a lot. But I think Shawn Michaels was a bigger draw on top at a time when, you know, let's be honest, it was more about the person drawing on top than it was the brand. You still have some guys you can classify as draws, John Cena being number one. When Cena's at a live event, it noticeably does bigger business. He is a draw. But for the most part, I think the WWE brand name now is the real draw. There's no more, you know, oh, whose name is on the marquee kind of business that you had 20, 30 years ago. It's WWE on the marquee now. Guys like Shawn and Bret, they carried the company on their back for years. When guys like Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage left, they were never the draws that Hogan and Savage were, or at least Hogan was, but they were the guys. They were the guys. I'm not sure Eddie Guerrero was ever the guy. In fact, I know he wasn't. And when he was the champion, he didn't draw all that well. So I'm going to say Shawn Michaels is the answer to that question. And we'll end with a buy or sell. Got a lot of feedback from you guys. You guys really love the idea of the segment. You sent in a ton of suggestions. I'll try to get to as many of them in the weeks ahead as I can. A lot of you had a good suggestion. I'll try to implement that going forward, where instead of just picking one name and doing a buy or sell, you pick two names. You buy one, you sell the other. And so this week's buy or sell is Moose from Ring of Honor or Titus O'Neil from WWE. And I'm going to go buy on Moose and sell on Titus. Now, I like Titus. Titus seems like a nice guy, right? They're giving him all this publicity now for being the father of the year. I wish more people could be the kind of father that Titus is to his kids. I think I just talked about this weeks ago, how I think it was that Kevin Owens promo where John Cena called him half a man or something like that, and I went off on a tangent about just having kids does not make you a man. It's how you conduct yourself that makes you a man and a good father. And Titus O'Neil, clearly, he's a good dad. He's got a lot of personality, seems like a fun guy. And I'm happy that the primetime players, whatever the reasons are, guys got hurt, so they didn't have a choice, whatever. They're getting a push. For the first time, they're getting a real push. They got the tag team titles. But Titus O'Neil, it's clear to me, they're never going to give him a shot as a single. It's just not going to happen. And he's not, how do I say this? I don't want to sit here and say that he's bad or he's horrible. He's not a great wrestler. And so I think that probably has as much to do with it as anything as far as why he'll never get that shot as a singles guy. Okay, he's been with them for years, and I don't know that he's really improved all that much. I don't see anything in Titus that screams main event to me. He's got some size, he's got the personality and the charisma, and that's about it. With Moose, I mean, he's still very green, he's still very new to the wrestling business. He's got the size, he's got the look. I saw a little bit of Moose when he first started. I was actually at a Ring of Honor show very, very shortly, I think, after he started with them. And it looks like, in the last year or so, he's come a long way. He's learning very fast. He's got the crowd behind him. He's getting better. And I said this last week, Moose is a guy that once he becomes available, WWE is going to snatch him up. I guarantee you they're going to make a play for him. And unless he just doesn't want to go, and I can't imagine he wouldn't want to go, they're going to get him. I don't know if it's going to be next year, the year after that, or 6 months from now, but they're going to get him. And he has the potential, a hell of a lot more than Titus O'Neil, to at least have the chance to become a big star. That's never going to happen with Titus O'Neil. With Moose, I think there's a real chance it could happen. And even if it doesn't happen in WWE, maybe it happens in some other promotion. But I would buy on Moose, and I would sell on Titus. I think there's big things for Moose in his future. For Titus, I hope this is not his peak. I hope that what we're seeing right now is not as high as he's going to go, because he's got the potential to do a little bit better, but I don't see him going above, mid-card level at best. So if you have a suggestion for buy or sell, keep emailing them to me. And same thing with the questions. TheSolemonster@gmail.com is the email address. Follow me on Twitter. @Solemonster is my handle on there. And check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolemonster. Shout out to TB Trax, who is back and showing us some love on his YouTube channel as well. So definitely check out his videos. And we will be back with a brand new episode next weekend. That'll be 390. We'll have a recap of the Tokyo show, which is next Saturday morning. Don't forget, set your alarms. It's going to be a good one. And I'm sure there'll be a ton of other TNA news as that whole situation unfolds. The whole company, it's a situation. The whole company is just one large situation that's completely forever unfolding. So I'm sure there'll be more news to talk about next week. And until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a good week, and also have yourselves a happy and safe Independence Day, which is coming up at the end of this upcoming week. It is the Independence Day holiday here in the States, so have a great holiday, and we will see you right back here again next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
Whatever happened to real men on this show? Can you imagine, in any other era of WWE, dressing down your top star the way that Stephanie McMahon did to John Cena on Monday night? They've done this with Cena, they've done this with Bryan, they've done it with Dolph, they've done it with Ryback, they did it with Rollins. Remember the infamous episode where Big Show was on his knees in the middle of the ring crying for his job? Tears are just streaming down this guy's face. This guy's 7 feet tall, 450 pounds, he's in the ring crying. He's a giant. Yeah, he's a giant pussy.
Solemonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solemonster sounds off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster sound off.